Hey folks, if you've been listening to our show, you've probably heard Victor talk about Hillsdale College. It's one of the few colleges in the U.S. still interested in teaching truth. What you probably didn't know is that they have over 40 free online courses. And Victor is one of the professors in three of those courses, American Citizenship and Its Decline, based on Victor's book, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and globalization are destroying the idea of America, the Second World Wars, based on his book by the same name, and Athens and Sparta, partly based on his book, A War Like No Other, How the Athenians and Spartans Fought the Peloponnesian War. Don't you wish Victor would have been one of your professors in college? Well, now you can join him as he covers some of the main ideas of his books with Hillsdale College's online courses, all available for free. That's right, for free. The courses are 7 to 9 episodes long, and they are self-spaced, so you can take them whenever and wherever. I think I'm going to start with American Citizenship and Its Decline, where Victor explores the history of citizenship in the West and the threats it faces today. Threats like the erosion of the middle class, the disappearance of our borders, the growth of an unaccountable deep state, and the rise of globalist organizations. Hey, start your free course with Victor Davis Hanson today. Go right now to hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. It's free and it's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. hillsdale.edu/VDH.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. This is the Friday News Roundup, and we've got lots on the agenda. Mayorkas impeachment failed, the border bill failed, which we were happy about, and lots of stories about Trump and his various cases, so we'll have a look into that. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. Make today the day you kickstart a new healthy routine. What are you waiting for? For our listeners, Factor is giving you 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month when you use the promo code VICTOR50 at factormeals.com/VICTOR50. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. Remember, to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month, head to factormeals.com/VICTOR50, that's VICTOR50, and use the code VICTOR50, that's code VICTOR50, at factormeals.com/VICTOR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Can't pay the IRS? Haven't filed in a while? Receiving threatening letters? Yeah, it's about to get worse. The IRS is hiring an army of agents targeting hardworking Americans like you. You need warriors on your side. You need Tax Network USA. Tax Network USA employs brilliant strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. For instance, they've discovered a limited-time special offer that the IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Never call the IRS alone. Let Tax Network USA attorneys handle it. They have preferred direct lines to the IRS. They know which agents to work with and which to avoid. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts and offer a best-in-class guarantee. Schedule your free consultation now. Call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or Visit taxnetworkusa.com/Victor. taxnetworkusa.com/Victor.
Welcome back. I would like to remind everybody and those who are new, Victor is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. He also has a website, victorhanson.com. Please come join us there. It's called The Blade of Perseus, and you will not be able to get into the Ultra VDH Ultra articles without a subscription. So we encourage everybody to subscribe. Those Ultra articles come out 3 times a week. So definitely lots of topics such as current political events, war, and also modern agriculture. So please come join us. Well, Victor, we have Mayorkas, I think at the top of the billing, Mayorkas, who was up for impeachment. That impeachment failed, and 4 of our Republicans did not vote to impeach him. And that was very strange. Do you have any insight into it?
Yeah, I do. It's very rare to impeach a cabinet. I think it's only happened once or twice, but in Mayorkas' case, he deserves it because I understand that he's carrying out the agenda of Joe Biden, but when you have 1, 2, 3, 4 million, 5, 6, 7, 8, and we're going to have 10 before this bunch is through, this is a deliberate act to destroy federal immigration law as we know it, destroy the border that was secure that they inherited, and for what reason? And I can give you 5 or 6 alternatives. Is it to have long-term demographic changes in the sense that people will come in illegally, their children then will be citizens, and they will vote? Or some of you say, no, Victor, 70% of people are voting absentee, mail-in, or early voting, and the error rate has dived. It's not that hard to go to any state agency in any state and get a mail-in ballot sent to your address. In fact, it's the law in some states. These people will be voting in the 2024 election. Or is the idea more nebulous the more you bring in? Joe Biden and the Democrats are already talking about $500 a person in New York. Gavin Newsom, $500 million for health care for illegal aliens. So I guess the idea is to grow the Great Society entitlement state, tax more the filthy rich, more redistribution. Or is it more of a nebulous globalist idea that we don't need borders, that if you just destroy them, they'll disappear forever? It's like the Roman Empire doesn't need the Danube and the Rhine. Look, it was much better in the 6th and 7th century AD than it was in the 2nd and 3rd. And by the way, people have argued that, just incidentally. So I don't know what the reason is, but if he was a federal servant who took an oath to execute the laws, and he didn't do it, and he did that deliberately, so he would be impeached. But then it brings up another question. They own the majority in the House, they being the Republicans. When the Democrats wanted to stop this impeachment, they brought one member in on a stretcher. And what did the Republicans do, whether it's the Speaker with McCarthy or whether it's signing up with this crazy Mitch McConnell bill? They never get united. They have no cohesiveness. So 4 people say what? And some of them, you know, I've spoken for Representative McClintock, and Gallagher is a very good guy. But don't they understand that there is an overwhelming need to show solidarity, because you have, Steve Scalise was not there, but you only have a 5-6 vote margin. If you break ranks in a way that Democrats never do, you'll never get anything done. So whatever your high principles are about not setting a precedent of impeaching cabinet members, it pales in comparison with the need to show solidarity. Because if you're going to do anything and stop this socialist project, you have to stick together. And they didn't do it with the Speaker, They brought in Democrats to warp the selection of the Republican Speaker of the House, and now they went after George Santos. I understand he's an inveterate liar, but ask yourself very carefully, do the Democrats get rid of Senator Mendez with gold bars and lush lucre all over his apartment and house? No, they don't do it. Do they go after Representative Bowman? Is that what his name was? Who let off the fire alarm and deliberately lied about it under oath? No, they don't go after him. It's only Republicans that say that we have to get rid of Santos because he's a liar, and if we don't, we're what? We're one person short. And you would have had that vote, and you would have impeached, and that would have sent a message to the country: you're not going to tolerate a federal executive deliberately destroying the laws of the United States. So the other thing is precedent. I heard this, Gallagher, McClintock, we don't want to send a precedent. Where have you people been? Let me just give you some precedents that you people in Congress slept through. There's now a precedent that you can impeach a president 2 times. Are you worried about that? There is now a precedent that you can try a president who has been impeached as a private citizen. Are you worried about that? There is now a precedent that you can remove a opposition candidate from the ballot. Are you upset about that? There is now a precedent that the Speaker of the House, i.e. Nancy Pelosi, drove, that the Speaker of the House can refuse the nominations on committees of the minority party leader, like Kevin McCarthy failed to get the people that he had nominated on the January 6th committee. Said you got 2 people, Kinzinger and Cheney, and they had 2 things in common. They were politically inert and had no political future, and they had voted to impeach Trump. And that's a precedent now. There is a precedent that they gave us that if you're in power and you have a majority, that filibuster is taboo. If you're in the minority and out of power, it's absolutely essential. So what I'm getting at is, for the last 5, 6, 7 years, they have been breaking precedent after. What is the idea? What was the move about getting rid of the Electoral College, packing the court, bringing in 2 states? They discussed all of that. And they actually, as I just mentioned, they reified a lot of these precedents. And now you're worried that if you impeach a cabinet officer who deserves impeachment because he has broken the law deliberately, serially, consecutively, month after month, you're worried about the precedent when every other precedent has been shattered and you haven't said a word, or you haven't, it didn't matter if you said a word, you didn't do anything about it. So this got a lot of people very angry. It really did. And I'm really angry about it. And it comes on the heels of this other bankrupt attempt that Mitch McConnell tried to sell of a bipartisan immigration bill that said we can let up to 5,000 people in, but we're going to have more facilities and funding to process people. What it really was when you read it, and I read parts of it, was how to streamline and make orderly illegal immigration. So it doesn't bother us. People are not defecating on the ground. Children are not coming in on it. It's going to make it all regular. But there's one missing truth. It's against the law. So you don't need any bill. None of the Republicans needed any bill. They didn't need any money. All they needed was to pressure the Democratic Party that is in extremists right now, because they have alienated their black constituencies and their Latino constituencies, who are impacted by their 8 million illegal entries. And all you have to do is say, you same people that are now blaming Donald Trump, you fought him tooth and nail for 4 years in the Congress and the liberal courts. And you know what? He finally triumphed over you. And he did 4 or 5 things. He stopped catch and release. He made refugee applicants apply for that status in their home nations. He started to fix the wall, and he was ready to start on the new wall. I think he did 25 miles of what was 1,500 miles plus. Okay, and most importantly, he went down and told Obadar, if you don't stop this transiting of people from your southern to your northern border, we're going to renegotiate NAFTA and slap a tariff. And we're going to look at the $60 billion you get, maybe put a $10 billion surcharge and then use the $6 billion to build the wall. And that stopped it. So when COVID hit in February of 2020, there was almost, after 2 million illegal entries that were forced down his throat by the left, they had stopped. So why can't the Democrats understand that it's against the law and the Republican Party is telling them, enforce the law. We don't want to discuss it. We do not want to have circumlocutions around it, talking about it. We don't want all of this massaging. Just enforce the law. It will cost no money. It will require no new legislation. And Donald Trump set a paradigm. Instead, what happened? You know what happened? What was the whole purpose of the Democratic effort? They knew they were not going to get necessarily a majority in the House to pass this. They knew that. But the whole point was to bring attention that the Republicans are stonewalling a bipartisan legislation. Therefore, pause. Joe Biden went on the air an hour later and said, Donald Trump is responsible for illegal immigration. And didn't they see that coming? Are they naive or stupid or foolish or what? All they had to say when they brought up this ridiculous idea is, you let in 8 million people illegally. They are here against the law. Deport them. Deport them all and then obey the law and we'll talk. But until you do that, we're not going to be a party to this illegality. And they couldn't do that. They could not, even though it's a winning issue. There's now three issues. You just look at the Pew poll or the latest Gallup. There are three issues. One is the economy, and they have a winning issue there because all they have to say is, I don't care what the annual inflation rate was. We had the most hyperinflationary period in 40 years under Joe Biden, and prices of things that count, food, shelter, appliances, car, health insurance, fire insurance, home insurance, they've gone up 30% and they haven't gone down. That's a winning issue, along with high interest rates and et cetera. And number two is crime. That is a winning issue. And number three is, guess what? Another winning issue is the border. And that's all they have to stick to. Crime, inflation, border. So why would you give them the border issue? I don't understand it. I do not understand it.
I don't think they recognize what they did at all. I just think
they're completely out of touch. They're completely out of touch. The day that they did this, I went into the local food market and I was in line behind about 9 people who didn't speak a word of English, and some of them did not speak very good Spanish. And you know what? They had maybe $500 of groceries, and they had EBT and WIC, every type of card you can have. And who was noticing this? Victor? No. Everybody around there was angry. And who was angry? Second and third generation Mexican-American people who need assistance. And they, well, how were they angry? Why are these, what is going on here? Why are these, what is going on? That's what people were saying. And everybody is tired of it, because you know what it is? It's a diminution of the citizen. And I wrote about it in The Dying Citizen. The citizen has no unique, singular rights vis-a-vis the resident, much less the illegal immigrant. If you're here illegally, you do not need a background check. You don't need a vaccine. Tell that to those 8,400 uniformed officers and enlisted people who were drummed out of the military for not having a vaccination. Did those same people who kicked them out go down to the border and said, you can't come in. We're afraid of COVID. There's Omicron Z and Delta Y, and they're all coming, and we're going to give everybody boosted ad infinitum. But so you can't. No, they don't say that. And you remember all of the real ID, real ID. You've got to have this. You've got to have your passport. You've got to have a bill showing your residence. And this is really going to clamp down on citizens abusing the air. No, it doesn't. They're putting people on the airplanes that are here illegally, that are waved through without any ID, not real or otherwise. I could go on, but you see what's going on is it's a move to make citizenship the equivalent of residency. And even that is generous of illegal residency, illegal residence. And at some point, people are going to have to say, you know what? This is not a country if it has no borders and no laws. It isn't. And, you know, we're $35 trillion in debt. And what I really like about the left is this. I don't like it, but I'm so amused. Every time they say $100 billion for Ukraine is this percent of the budget, and then they say, oh, you know, $3 billion more for illegal aliens, that's just 1%. And they just keep doing that. 1%, 0.5%, 0.25%, it adds up. You know, as I think it was Senator Everett Dirksen said, a billion here and a billion there, and then got real money. Well, now it's a trillion here and a trillion there, and it's real money. And the people who pay for this don't feel any longer they're getting a good deal in the bargain. They're paying high taxes, and they're getting crappy roads, and they're getting crappy infrastructure, and they're getting crappy schools, and they get crappy law enforcement. And they say, why am I doing this? Why am I paying 50% of my income, 55% depending on the state in which they live, when people are just prancing across the border? And if you even object that we don't have the money to process 8 million people, which is, you know, eight new million person cities, some of the poorest people in the world with no background check, no legality, no bachelor's degree, no high school diploma, no doubt, no English facility. But it's just a few billion, Victor. Just a few billion. Don't worry. Yeah. I don't think this is sustainable. I always look back to the 5th century AD and the Rhine and Danube were completely overrun. And you could argue that the military culture that grew up along the Danube, and it was kind of like Mexifornia. It was neither Mexico or California. It was just neither Rome nor Germany. It was just a new culture. People in left-wing classics thought it was great. This is the creation of the Dark Ages and then the Middle Ages and modern Europe. No, it was the destruction of classical civilization. It was.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. I never thought, I think all of us that are in our 60s or 70s or 80s never thought that you would live to see the things you're seeing. I never thought it would. I never thought it would be like this. I never thought that we would have a secretary. I never thought we'd have a secretary of the interior of Homeland Security. I think that was a big mistake to create the post after 9/11 in the first place. Because think about it. You have a... what now? A Secretary of Homeland Security? And he's doing all he can to destroy security? So every time you make a new agency, the left looks at it as an opportunity to get a lot of money to do the exact opposite of the original mission statement of the legislation. The Department of Justice is the Department now of Injustice. Department of Internal Revenue Service, it's no service at all. It's selectively applying the law to particular enemies or friends. And I never thought I'd get like this. I always kind of laughed at people when I was in my 20s. Oh, they're just afraid of government or government this. Reagan would always say, you know, be careful when somebody knocks on the door and says, I'm from government here to serve you. Scariest thing in the English. Okay, I get it. But you know what? They were prescient.
Yeah.
You've got lot of people who are not elected. I mean, like millions. And they are quasi-educated, or at least they're stamped with particular letters after their name, and they really do hate the people in the United States, and they feel that they're judge, jury, and executioner. And it's very scary.
Yeah.
And it's altering the very... Everybody says, well, these are abstract. No, they're not. You can't go to San Francisco and walk around Union Square anymore. Somebody asked me the other day, are you going to go to San Francisco? I said, where would I park? Park downtown, you're going to lose your windshield. And you know what? When you lose your windshield and you call the police, they're not going to come. they're not going to come. And then everybody says, well, I just looked at my insurance, Farmers, State Farm. Gosh, they've gone up. California Casualty, they've gone up 30%. Yeah, of course they do. But they've made life almost impossible to live in some certain aspects. And you can see where this is going. It's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to cause a mass disenchantment and disconnection from the majority culture, kind of like the fortified farm in North Africa around 400 AD, or it's going to cause people just to give up and flee, or it's going to cause people to resist. And I don't know which it is, but it's not sustainable.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and come back and talk a little bit about the Trump cases, since they are also on the dock here today. Stay with us and we'll be right back.
Have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and veggies may actually lower your risk of cancer. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. If not, you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is found in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. Will Field of Greens prevent, treat, or cure cancer? No, but it's so powerful, it promises at your next checkup, your doctor will notice your improved health or your money back. I got you 15% off and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code VICTOR, V-I-C-T-O-R, for your discount. That's promo code VICTOR at fieldofgreens.com, fieldofgreens.com.
Folks, we're sponsored today by Donors Trust, the tax-friendly way to preserve your charitable giving. In times of crisis, those with a giving spirit and a desire to build up civil society find ways to be helpful. And that's when it's good to have a charitable resource ready to deploy when they're needed most. Donors Trust offers donor-advised funds or giving accounts. You can use these funds as your own charitable investment account and manage your charitable giving in a way that's smart, tax-advantaged, aligned with your values, and private. Donors Trust clients are using their funds to support charities helping their local communities while also using their giving account to simultaneously support think tanks and liberty-minded organizations that believe our constitutional rights shouldn't get lost in a time of emergency. Now is the time to take a closer look at Donors Trust and join their community of liberty-minded donors by opening a donor advised fund. Go to donorstrust.org/justnews for the ultimate survival guide to charitable giving and learn how a donor advised fund can preserve your ability to give to the charities you love. That's donorstrust.org/justnews.
Welcome back to the Victor Davis Hansen Show. We have a new sponsor of our show, Solar Infrared Gas Grills. After a long day, no one wants to spend an hour in the kitchen making dinner. Well, how about quick and easy barbecue? No, not takeout. I'm talking juicy steaks, succulent chicken or fish, and healthy grilled vegetables. Cook on your own solar infrared gas grill. Solar grills are the hot fast grills that heat up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even in the dead of winter. And that heat locks in juices and flavors and grills your food faster. A veteran-owned, multi-generational family business. Each solar grill is made in the USA. Out of quality, commercial-grade stainless steel, it will be the last grill you'll ever buy. Visit besthotgrill.com for their free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill. For apartment balconies to backyard entertainment areas, that's besthotgrill.com. With a hot, fast solar infrared gas grill, you'll want to grill every day. Get your free guide at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Com. And that sounds like a good product. And we welcome, like I said, Solar Infrared Gas Grills as a sponsor of the Victor Davis Hanson Show.
You know, before I continue, I was just going to think of an addendum.
Okay.
They had one rare outburst of honesty that Chris Murphy, the senator from, I think he's from Connecticut, he said the other day on TV. I was channel surfing, and he said to Chris Hayes or whoever that crazy guy is on MSNBC, who was lamenting the fact that this bill that would have given amnesty or green-lighted citizenship failed, and it's unfortunately failed. And he said, yes, that is what we've been trying to do for 30 years, is forced, you know, the right to give citizenship to these illegal aliens and amnesties, and we failed. And then he said something that was really, but he said, you know what? You've got to change. Because in the old days, there was a few hundred that showed up that we were trying to give amnesty as illegal aliens for breaking the law. Now it's thousands, 10, 12,000. So what he was saying is, yeah, I'm for no borders, and I'm for amnesty, but this stuff we created, this Frankensteinian monster, it's devouring us, and it's destroying us, and it's going to get us elected out of, thrown out of office. It's very funny to see that guy say that I really want to amnesty all these people, but I can't because I have so alienated the American people that it is intolerable that they would even consider it, given that we destroyed the border for our own selfish reasons. And therefore, for me to maintain my senatorial office, I must agree that we have to try to close the border. I thought that was stunning.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's turn to Donald Trump and the four cases. And just to give an update on some current news about them, in the Fannie Willis case, one of the co-defendants, David Schaefer, has filed a motion to disqualify Willis for media banter that would possibly make a jury prejudicial, is the argument. And then also in the D.C. case by Tanya Chutkan, the D.C. Circuit Court has denied Trump's immunity claims for things he said and did in office. And they said that because the election is outside of his, you know, office, what he does, then things that he said and did about election counts, et cetera, don't apply to that immunity. So those are the two cases this week that popped up, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on the current.
Well, to put it in a larger context, Donald Trump is facing or has faced four types of indictments. From Jack Smith, the federal prosecutor, Fannie Willis, the Fulton County, Georgia prosecutor, on grounds of election interference, on Alvin Bragg, campaign financing, he is the Manhattan District Attorney, and Letitia James, who is the Attorney General of the entire state of New York, and she's after him for supposedly falsifying business records to inflate the value of his property. And then we have E. Jean Carroll, the plaintiff who sued for an allegation and won of sexual assault. Okay. Let's just look at what the result of all this has been. Number one, for bad or good, fair or unfair, these suits destroyed every other Republican opponent of Donald Trump. Before they were filed in 22 and 23, Donald Trump was going to run a spirited defense of his 4 years, and he probably would have won, but it would have been closer. But after people saw what they were doing to him, they just said, oh my God, they are destroying the country. They're trying to emasculate a presidential candidate and ex-president. So whatever I feel about Nikki Haley or DeSantis or Chris Christie or Ramaswamy, I have to show empathy for what they're doing to Donald Trump. That was number one. Number two, They're all left wing. Jack Smith may be an independent. His wife is left wing. His past record is left wing. Fannie Willis is left wing. Alvin Bragg is left wing. Letitia James is left wing. E. Jean Carroll is very left wing. Number three, every single one of these indictments or plaintiffs had to massage or change the law. Okay, Jack Smith is caught charging Donald Trump not only with removing classified files to Mar-a-Lago, but insurrection on January 6th. And he's using the 1868 14th Amendment statute. Does anybody believe that after the Civil War, people said, let's pass a law so that in the future, any time a ex-president who's running for re-election is under intense scrutiny, the power that be in office and the opposition to him can say that his rhetoric is insurrectionary or his activity, and therefore he is what? Guilty of insurrection and can be prosecuted. I don't think that's what they meant. It was for Confederate enlisted officers who took up arms in a formal insurrection. Whatever you think about Donald Trump's wisdom of meeting anybody on January 6th out in front of the White House and talking to them, insurrectionists do not say, and now please march peacefully and patriotically over to the Capitol. And insurrectionaries do things like grab the TV station and they're armed. That buffoonish group was not an insurrection. Closer to an insurrection was May, June, July, August, September, October 2020. So when you look at Alvin Bragg, he has to stretch the law. Does anybody believe that Stormy Daniels, this sexual alleged tryst was 2005? You're talking about decades ago. And what did Donald Trump do? Well, I tell you what he didn't do. He didn't hire a foreign national, which is illegal to work on a campaign, named Christopher Steele. He didn't use four paywalls himself, the DNC, Perkins Coie, Fusion GPS, to pay the guy off. He didn't take hammers and break up his communication devices under subpoena. He didn't lose 30,000 emails under subpoena. He didn't do any of that. He didn't try to use a dossier to make up lies about his opponent for advantage in a political campaign. No, you know what they're getting him on? He signed a non-disclosure form. So the guy is married. He has five kids. He's got a Randy reputation. He now says, I'm going to run for office. It's 2015. And somebody says, hey, Donald, remember Stormy? Oh, there's Stormy. Yes, but that was a decade ago. Donald, I guarantee you that if you run for office, she's going to come out of the woodwork and be used by the left. Let's get a non-disclosure agreement. So go get a non-disclosure agreement. So they did, and they paid her money. And they, of course, knew that she would break the non-disclosure agreement, what she did. But he is saying that that was a campaign finance expense that they hid. And that is a criminal? Barack Obama in 2008 disguised the names of his major contributors. And that was not a criminal offense. Apparently, they fined him $375,000. And he didn't have to pay until 5 years later, but they never put him in jail. If you're a businessman like Donald Trump and you've got this crazy Stormy Daniels that's coming after you for a supposed tryst, if he wasn't running for office just to protect his reputation or his family, he would have had a non-disclosure. So why is that a campaign violation? I can tell you why, because they didn't have anything else. And Alvin Bragg had run for election on the idea he was going to get Trump. Then we have Letitia James. She says that he falsified a record because he gave false information to a bank. And he got a loan. Okay. And then they said, Letitia, who was injured? The bank has auditors. They're smarter than you. They know exactly what Mar-a-Lago and other properties are worth. So they issued a loan. But But what? He didn't pay interest? No, he paid millions of dollars of interest. Did he? Well, no, he paid the principal off. So what is the problem? There was no problem, except she ran on the idea to get Donald Trump. Then we get to E. G. Carroll. She says, Donald Trump had sex with me in 1996. And I know that because I had a designer dress on that day. No, I didn't. It was not in existence. And I know it's the Bergendorf department store. And how do you know that? Because I saw a 2012 episode of Law and Order where a woman went into the lingerie section and she started flirting with a very powerful man, and they ended up in the fitting room, the dressing room, and there was he said, she said assault, and then they had a case, and I saw it on and it was the same department store. Okay.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And, by the way, I have an app that I'm trying to market, and it's called Love Game. And it's about, in my own words, how to be more evil than your opponent. And the calibration of evilness is how you break up couples by lying about them. Ooh, that's a good game. And so, by the way, I'm out. It's now 2016, and Donald Trump is running for office. And 2015, I will tweet that he's my favorite TV star. I may have been raped by him, I allege, but he's my favorite, and I watched The Apprentice. That's what she said. And then we get to 2017. The left hates him. She wants to be an icon of the left. She's on the left anyway. She says, I was sexually assaulted. And I don't know when it was, and I don't know what dress I had on. I don't know anything, but I was sexually assaulted. They said, sorry, E. Jean Carroll, that's the statute of limitations. Oh, wait a minute. There's a guy in the state legislature in New York, and he did a pretty good job. He changed the law and said that you could go after a New York person's private tax returns if he was under investigation by the federal government, and they got Trump's tax return. He's going to make a new law. It said, just for 12 months, Gene, just for 12 months, you can file a sexual assault no matter how long ago it took place. Mm-hmm. It's a bill of attainder, basically, or ex post facto law. You know, show me the person, I'll show you the crime.
Yeah.
Maria's logic. And so that's how she refiled it. And then the judge didn't find rape, or the jury didn't. But he said, you know, I didn't find rape, but it's really rape. And then finally we get to the third thing they all have in common. They are not only all left-wing, and they are not only all massaged the laws, and they all had another thing in common. They were all big city prosecutors, and these are not going to take place in Ogden, Utah. They're not going to take place in Visalia, California. They're going to take place in New York and Washington, probably Miami and Atlanta, and they're going to have a left-wing prosecutor and a left-wing judge, and they have had left-wing judges, and a left-wing jury pool. And there's a final commonality. Two more, excuse me. One, they all are trying to expedite these trials for what? The campaign season of 2024. Jack Smith's trying to do it. Letitia James is trying to do it. They're all trying to do it. They're trying to make this a political thing. And finally, they all have questionable ethics problems about them. Fannie Willis hired a stealthy boyfriend. As Sammy said, we're just learning that they had this relationship for quite a long time, according to the divorce suit that his wife filed. And guess what? He had no felony or criminal legal experience whatsoever. So what does she do? She puts him in charge of a felony criminal case, and she pays him $250 an hour, which is more than any other of the experienced criminal felony attorneys she had. And oh, by the way, he works 24 hours a day and bills her, the state, the county of Fulton, 24 hours in one day. And by the way, she sends her prosecutors to the January 6th committee to be coached and instructed. And by the way, Nicholas Wade, her boyfriend, goes to the White House to be coached by White House counsel. And by the way, he charged them $250 an hour for their time. His time, I guess. Never heard of that before. And by the way, they went on junkets and trips and cruises, and they even built their safe house where they met up to the county of Fulton. And that is the person who is in charge and who promised to get Donald Trump. And then we go to Alvin Bragg. What do we know about Alvin Bragg besides the fact that no one in the wildest dreams would think that somebody years earlier who had a embarrassing tryst and asked the paramour or the one-time hookup to sign a non-disclosure that someday in the future that would be a campaign finance violation. But it's not just a sin of commission. What is he not talking about, Alvin Bragg? He's not talking about Venezuelans going right into downtown New York and beating the holy crap out of two brave police officers and then showing up in his district attorney jurisdiction and being let out the same day only to get a bus to go to Gavin Newsom's California. That's who Alvin Bragg is. And then we come to Letitia James. She ran on the same idea. Vote for me and I will get Trump. Patently political. So all of them have some type of, I don't know, questionable, dubious conflicts of interest, weaponization of the office for political reasons, statute. But what was interesting about Letitia James is she can't find one precedent in New York law. She can't say, well, I'm indicting Donald Trump because even though there was no victim, he overvalued his real estate to get a loan which he paid off and profited the bank handsomely by, and which the auditors of the bank had no problem, and which the bank never filed a complaint. And that happens all the time in New York. Could she just give us one case? No. There's no precedent for it. It's like there's no precedent for non-disclosure forms being campaign finance matters. Just like there's no precedent in Fulton County. So we get to the last point I was making, that any of these crimes could be easily charged symmetrically to somebody on the left, i.e. somebody like the Bidens, for example, or major political figures. Don't believe me? Okay, let's go through them very, very quickly, Sammy. I know I'm going too long. Let's take E. Jean Carroll, who had a sexual alleged tryst more than 20 years ago and sexually assaulted a woman who then came forward years later. It couldn't be Tara Reid, could it? Who said that she was a senatorial staffer for Joe Biden, and once Joe Biden ran for president, she came out of the woodwork and said, you know what, he sexually assaulted me, and I talked to people, and you know, her mother called into Larry King and said, my daughter's been sexually assaulted at the time. So what happened? Did Joe Biden have to pay her, I don't know, $83 million? Was he convicted of, he wasn't even charged. Okay, and let's go to, how about Fannie Willis, election denialism in Georgia? Who sued the state of Georgia and tried to stop the legitimate inauguration of the governor of Georgia in 2018? Couldn't be Stacey Abrams, could it? Remember, she lost by 50,000 votes, and she said that it was election fraud. And then she not only sued, she created a PAC and raised money to litigate forever this 2008 loss. She ran again, of course, and lost again by a wider margin. But the point is, after 2008, she spread her denialism all over the country. She became an iconic pop figure to the left. Stacey, the one who was robbed, she did a lot of damage challenging the integrity of Georgia Ballot. Did anybody charge her with conspiracy? No. No one did. Okay, now we're getting into Letitia James and altering records and insufficient records for business transactions. Joe Biden, the same day that his brother got is it $400,000 or $600,000 from a foreign entity? He wrote a check for $200,000 to Joe Biden, and he wrote on the bottom, loan repayment.
I'm going to do that from now on.
Exactly. So all we have to do is, would the Biden family please not backdate it, just show us a formal loan agreement? No. And so I'm assuming that Letitia James will say, oh my God, if Donald Trump did not commit a crime and he paid off his loan, but I found that his bookkeeping was fraudulent, then I want to see also this. No.
No.
So we've done Greg, we've done Carol, we did Fannie Willis, not symmetrical, election denialism. Oh, there's one more, Jack Smith. So he's going to indict Trump, or he did, on two general areas. Insurrectionary activity and earlier taking classified documents. Whatever you say about Donald Trump, you can say he's sloppy, he's careless, but he had the legal right. All he would have had to do is, I'm taking these documents out, and as President of the United States, I formally declassify them. And he could have filed the necessary paperwork. Cash Patel was on and said basically he can do it de facto by, you know, I think he said something to the effect that Trump spoke to a lot of people, take them out, they're declassified. But that's not, you know, authorized to do that. But he had the power. Joe Biden did not have the power to do that. He took them out as a senator. He took them out as a vice president. He put them in three or four different locations. Does anybody think that Joe Biden's Corvette rickety garage with Hunter coming in and out was more secure than Mar-a-Lago with a security guard outside the estate and completely walled and fenced with Secret Service agents there? I don't think it was. And yet they didn't. There's a special counsel. Does anybody believe he'll indict Joe Biden?
They've finished their investigation, but I doubt they'll indict him.
He's not going to indict him. It's just good old Joe from Pennsylvania. He's not going to indict him at all. And you know what? There was some allegations that some of the material may have turned up on some of the communications that Hunter used to impress his foreign clients, as if he had. And why did he take them out as a senator? I think he took them out so that he could go around the Biden family and say, did you know in this particular country, this, as if they had expertise that was saleable.
Yeah.
And so there was no symmetry there at all. And does anybody really believe about insurrection? Does Donald Trump, you know, they're getting him off the ballot. Was he ever charged with insurrection? I don't remember he was. Has he ever been convicted of insurrection? Okay, so he's been called an insurrectionist by Mr. Smith, and he's going to indict him for his January 6th activity when he not only said assemble peacefully and patriotically, but he said you have to fight like hell. I guess that's what it did. And then he had people around him that kept saying that we can stop. You know, John Eastman said you have a right for the electorate to have an alternate slate of electorate, all that. Okay. If that's insurrectionary, then this is insurrectionary. In 2004, Barbara Boxer and over 30 House members refused to certify the Electoral College count from the state of Ohio. And that was deliberate. They would have done it from every state, but they only needed to do it from one because that was the determining electoral vote in the 2004, and they wanted to throw the election to John Kerry. I don't know. Did anybody say that's insurrectionary? In 2016... the Democrats and the left raised millions of dollars for a coordinated campaign to have false electors, counterfeit electors, unfaithful electors. What does that mean? That means that each elector from the state, the electors, takes an oath to honor the popular vote. So they thought, well, maybe they don't have to honor the popular vote. So we're going to run ads on TV nonstop before the December meeting of the electors, and we're going to try to convince them that Donald Trump is so bad that they have a constitutional duty to break the constitution of their states and the federal government and switch over and give their electors to Hillary. Did Jack Smith or anybody come out of the woodwork and say, that's racketeering, that's interstate fraud, that is unconstitutional, that is insurrection? I don't remember that. And some of you say, Well, Victor, it wasn't so much what they did, it was what Trump said. He kept saying that Trump, the election was fraudulent. He kept saying that, you know, he revved up that crowd on January. Yes, okay, did he say this? Right after people had been swarming the White House grounds, after they torched a federal courthouse, after they had torched a police precinct, after they had torched an iconic church in Lafayette Square, did they say this? These are not going to stop. These protests are not going to stop, nor should they stop. These protests are going to go on, and they're going to go on. They're going to go on beyond the election. They're not going to stop, and they shouldn't stop. Did he say that?
No, that was Kamala.
That was Kamala Harris. Is anybody going to say, you know, I look back, and now that we have a precedent, that if you say you have to fight like hell to an assembled crowd that is insurrectionary, and I just saw that Kamala Harris did the same thing on television even, with even a bigger audience than just assembled there, so we're going to charge her with insurrection. No, they're not going to do that. So if these people are of questionable character, and they're applying the law in an asymmetrical fashion, usually that hasn't been used before, and there's ample Democratic and left-wing legal exposure for the same crime, and they have, in many cases, personal ethics problems, or they've committed crimes themselves, like Fannie Willis, no doubt, then nobody has any confidence in it. And that's why Donald Trump soared from his rock bottom, I don't know, July, August 2021, he was at rock bottom. And then they looked at this, and they looked at this, and they looked at this, and then they said, oh my God, we went through laptop disinformation, we went through Russian collusion, we went through Axios bank pinging. Oh my God, now we're into ballot removal in Colorado. What, enough is enough. And they created, they gave Trump a comeback. You know, just to finish this rant, this is the most amazing political comeback, resurrection in modern times. It outdoes Richard Nixon. And in 1960, Richard Nixon lost one of the closest popular votes, if not the closest popular vote in history. There was wide-scale accusations in some counties in Texas that LBJ, who was running as JFK's vice president, had some influence, or Cook County and Mayor Daley, who knows. But he did not contest it, and he was ridiculed as a loser. And then 2 years later, he went out to California, where he was born. They called him a carpetbagger, and he lost to Pat Brown, Jerry's dad, 1962. Remember that famous press conference? I want to tell everybody that you should be very happy, because you're not going to have Dick Nixon to kick around. This is my last press conference. And he was done. They said, he's done. He's all over with. And guess what happened? He started looking at the fact that Kennedy was assassinated, that LBJ was a mess, the country was divided, and he was a very smart guy. He'd started going around to all the House races and conservative districts, and at his time and his own expense, he started campaigning. And he created a lot of solid friendships, which he had anyway from a lifetime in politics. And it came around in 1968, he got the nomination, and he narrowly beat Hubert Humphrey. I won't get into Watergate, but nobody thought that was possible. There was another one, Ronald Reagan. People forget in 1968, when I just mentioned Nixon had the entire convention sewed up, Ronald Reagan did a last-minute ambush. He went to the convention and said, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we can have a contested convention, and you guys can throw the delegates to me. And he said, no, Ronnie, you've only been governor for 2 years. You're 57. You got plenty of time. And he lost. And then he was governor from 66 to 74, I guess. And he decided, wait a minute, I'm going to run for governor again. I'm only 65 years old. So in 1976, Gerry Ford, who had been appointed president, elevated from vice president when Nixon resigned, facing impeachment, probably would have been impeached. Guess what happened? Ronald Reagan said, I'm going to run. And Reagan was wiped out for the first five primaries. They said, he's too right-wing, he's too populist nationalist. Kind of like, you know, Make America Great 1.0. And then Reagan caught fire as the primaries went to the South, and he came into the convention, and there was only about 60 to 80 delegates separating them. And it came down very close, but Reagan lost at the convention. He could not sway other delegates. And they said, you know what, Reagan? You've now run for president twice. You're 65 years old. And what did Gerry Ford do? He said, damn it, Reagan, you're going to cost me the election because you contested an incumbent president. How dare you? It tore the Republican Party apart. Are you a loyalist going to support the incumbent, or are you going to go with this crazy reactionary populist out in California? So then we had Jimmy Carter, and it was an ungodly disaster, as everybody knows. So in 1980, Reagan is 69, and people said, this can't happen. The guy would be 78 years old, 77 years old if he had two terms. In that era, almost a half century ago, a septuagenarian was an octogenarian or more now. Said, no, he's too old. And by the way, we have a sober and judicious Republican, George H.W. Bush. He's got the best resume you can imagine. Congress, CIA, everything. He's done everything, and he's very careful. He's not one of these crazy right-wing nuts. And Reagan's too old. And Reagan, you know, started a little bit slow, and he creamed George H.W. Bush, and he came back, and they said he can't win. He cannot win. There is no way that the Republican Party can put up a right-wing Goldwater 2.0 and beat an incumbent Democratic president. And Reagan said, yeah, I can win. Every time they asked him about the hostages that Carter would mumble and bumble about, he said, there will be no hostages when I'm president. What? What does that mean? There will be no hostages when I'm president. Are you going to start World War III? There will be no hostages when I'm president. And they called you voodoo economics. You can't cut. I will cut the tax rate to 28. I will starve the beast. Okay? Sounds crazy. And guess what? On October 14th, ooh, wow, just 2 weeks before the 1980 election, everybody thought Reagan had it won. No. He did not. According to, I think it was a Gallup poll, Reagan was 7 points behind Jimmy Carter 2 weeks before the election. I don't believe it was accurate, but he won. So here you had a guy that was written off in 68, considered a kook, when he tried to take the nomination in 76, an old has-been in 80, and who's going to lose the election 2 weeks before, who's now president? And yet, Donald Trump, when you look at him in mid-2021, you could say the following. Donald Trump is now hated. He lost the election. He came in with the House and the Senate. He lost the House. And now we have one last chance to get the Senate on January 5th, the day before. We need to get Perdue and Loeffler elected, reelected. And this aide, people said, of course they'll be reelected. You think that Georgia is a red state, man? They're not going to... Look at this Ossoff and Warnick. They are communists. They're not going to elect two people in Georgia. And what did Trump do? There's no chance. They rigged everything in Georgia. I made a phone call and I lost Georgia by 12,000 votes. And the whole thing. And he basically sent a subtle message to his MAGA people. Don't show up. It's not worth it. And by the way, Perdue had won in the general election just months earlier, but he didn't get quite a majority. He just fell short by a few thousand votes. Loeffler was considered an appointee. You know, she was taking Jeff Sessions. No, not Jeff Sessions. Another person's place who had retired, and she was considered pretty good, kind of a Wall Street creature. So guess what? He also alienated the independent and the moderate. I can't vote for these people. They have, you know, it's this Republican Party. It's embarrassing me. So he offended both spectrums of the Republican Party, and they lost. They didn't just lose. They lost the Senate. And so what did everybody say? I went back and looked at the media the other day. They said, oh, my God, Donald Trump lost the Georgia Senate races. It's his fault, and he lost the Republicans the Senate. And you know what? People also editorial. I was looking at six or seven editorial. They basically said this. Donald Trump can survive being crazy. He can be survive being ridiculed as a far-right nut. He cannot survive being tagged as a loser. And he lost the House and the Senate and now the presidency. He gave both houses of Congress. And then guess what? The indictment started the next year. And he was at zero credibility, and he was all through just like Nixon and Reagan. And then guess what happened? The indictments turned out the opposite of everybody, what they thought. They thought they would embarrass him, mar him. No, they gave him empathy, and he soared ahead. And the more they tried to rig the judicial system and commit lawfare against them, the better he looked. And then guess what happened? It was not good old Joe from Scranton. It was good Joe Biden, who skedaddled from Afghanistan, the biggest humiliation in American history. It was Joe Biden who inherited a stable Middle East and blew it up, just like he blew up a stable border, and Putin invaded, and there was a Chinese balloon, and we saw the greatest spike in inflation in 40 years, and there was a crime rate that was surreal when criminals were just smashing and grabbing, and you know the story. And Joe Biden turned out to be not good old Joe, but non compos mentis, who believes he talks to dead people. And all of a sudden, Donald Trump is leading Joe Biden in polls from anywhere from 3 to 7 points in swing states, and nationally as well. That's the greatest comeback, and we don't know how it's going to end.
No.
But my God, the Democrats must be really wondering, why did we shoot ourselves in the foot? We thought we could destroy him financially, physically, psychologically, politically, and all we did was give him more ammunition and more empathy about the terrible things we've done to the country.
Yeah. Well, Victor, you just gave the outline of a really good book that should be written. Maybe someday we'll see that.
I am going to write it.
Are you going to write it?
Yes. Everything I said today, I promised my leaders that came to me in a fit. I'm going to issue the case for Trump, and with a new, not just a stupid little, this is an update, because I don't think people should have to pay for just the same book when you put a little preface. I'm talking about 10,000 words. I'm going to write the whole thing out and tell everybody how he came back.
Yeah.
And that will be out, I hope. Because I think it's really a historic
moment.
Occasion.
Yeah.
I won't mention names. I'm not going to mention names. But I did interviews for that six-month period, and I can tell you that some of the most stalwart Trump supporters, unwavering loyal, said that something like off the air in the commercial break, I'm not going to vote for him. He's embarrassed me. I'm not going to vote for Trump. And 6 months to a year later, they said, my God, if we don't have him, we're not going to save the country. Something happened, and it wasn't, I want to add one last little fillip to it. It wasn't that Donald Trump was just a passive figure. A lot of things he did, he has a far more professional team around him than he did in 2016 and 20. He is more experienced. He's been through it twice. He's governed 4 years. And there are moments when Donald Trump is really if you listen to that Iowa speech, you can see why MSNBC and CNN stopped it. They didn't air it because it was really wonderful. If he had given one on New Hampshire like it would have been wonderful even more so. But he's a much more effective candidate. You know what? And every time they try to destroy him, like getting him off Twitter, he just has his own true social, but he doesn't have 88 million people, hanging on every word that he says. So he has, I guess what I'm saying, it's in his own hands now. He's in charge of his own destiny. He can be elected president. He has no margin of error, but if he does everything right, he can be elected president. And that would be just unthinkable a few months earlier.
Well, Victor, we need to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about, and now I feel like this is sort of a a downer that we'll come back and talk about Mayor Eric Adams. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We're back. Victor, there's a new film out. From the New York Times bestselling author Eric Metaxas comes a riveting new film, Letter to the American Church. The film explores the parallels between the 1930s Nazi Germany and Mao and Stalin regimes and the infiltration of the cultural Marxism in America today. The church's decision to stay out of politics undermines the very message of the gospel and its power to transform human existence. Metaxas issues an urgent call to the church: stay silent and abandon its mission of proclaiming liberty, or stand up to the forces of evil. Join Eric and several leading voices of today as they explain how America and her church are at the precipice of destruction and need to wake up and take action. Don't miss this film, streaming February 8th on Epoch TV, part of the Epoch Times. Visit lettertotheamericanchurch.com for more information. Letter to the American Church, this film is not yet rated. So, Victor, our mayor, Eric Adams, is trying to sell the New York City population on $53 million for cards to these illegal immigrants. And he is getting bad press because of that. And he said that all the people who are giving him bad press are just racists. And that's all. And he said that right at the same.
No, he didn't. He said, they would look at all the chocolate.
Yes, while he was standing in a meeting and he had just said one of the most racist things I've heard. Look, we have chocolate on the bench here as my office, my executive branch. And he's kind of like Joe Biden, if you think about him. He just says really racist things and then he thinks it's okay, I guess. But besides that, the whole idea that you're going to give illegal aliens $53 million. You know, the funny thing was, I watched one of these television shows and they went out and interviewed New Yorkers and they were all black that were criticizing Mayor Adams.
Well, all I can say is human nature is based on deterrence. Deterrence means that you behave accordingly. For some people, deterrence is going to hell. For some reasons, it's shaming your family. For some reasons, it's you don't want to risk your health. You don't want to drive 90 miles an hour because you might get in a wreck, or you might get a traffic ticket, or you might be embarrassed. But there, human nature being what it is, it has to be deterred. But when you take any group, white, black, Latino, and you give them special exemption and say, you know what, we owe you, we're guilty, we owe you as a collective. We as a collective owe you as a collective. And you erode deterrence. So what is happening is, when you have these DEI issues, you think that's the beginning? Excuse me, the end? It is only the beginning, because you have to go down the same line. So what Eric Adams is basically saying, I ran as a black candidate. And I mean that literally. He said that do you remember that campaign statement, Sammy, where he said, I vote for me, I took on the crackers in the police department, crackers? And no one said anything. So he was going to be the minority candidate, and he was going to be the left-wing person, and he got rid of that. Andrew Cuomo was an arrival. And then when the first bus pulled in August of, 2022 with migrants, what did he do? Remember he went out and he met them with water bottles and he bragged about this was the most diverse city, so diverse people would love it. And then all of a sudden he was swarmed. So now things are not going for him. Alvin Bragg has helped his popularity crash. Letitia James has helped his. And so guess what? Everybody says he's a terrible mayor. And he is. So what does he do? He says, well, this can't be because I got elected on the basis of racial demagoguery. And so I'm going to keep doing it. And that's what he did. If you think he's unique, you've got a sad idea. No. Claudine Gay. Has anybody become president of Harvard with 9 articles and not a single book? You can't even be tenured at Cal State with that record, speaking as a Cal State former professor. But she was. And she rode the stallion of DEI till she was worn out. And guess what? It blew up. And people said, you know what? The question is not why she was fired, but why was she even hired as a president? She is a serial plagiarist. Nobody dared to look at her record because she was a black woman. And what did she do? She said it was racist. This is racist that they're firing. No, it was racist when they hired you. Racist when we hired you. And then what did Fannie Willis say the other day? They found out that she was channeling state money to her boyfriend that she tried to hide after she'd given lectures when she ran for office about no boyfriends. And guess what? They had a little safe house, all of that stuff. And when they called her out, and it's racist, or they always say the same thing, these racial demagogues. They always say they're scared of a proud black woman. I'm a powerful black woman. And that frightens people. Michelle Obama said that at one point. No, it doesn't. It just, you're just a woman and you just happen to be black. Big deal. No deal. Big deal. It's like a powerful white woman. Who cares? Unpowerful. Weak white. It doesn't matter. It's what you do. And if you plagiarize somebody's work and you pass it off as your own, you're a thief. And if you're at Harvard University that lectures everybody that you are the standard, the benchmark, the gold standard of education, and the president is a thief, an intellectual thief, it's unsustainable. It has nothing to do with you. And if you're Fannie Willis, all you have to do, you're elected, is not channel $650,000 to the guy you're secretly screwing, who has no criminal or felony experience, that you put in charge of a criminal felony case while you were using funds to buy a safe house to hook up with him. Just don't do that. It's all you have to do, and you can't even do that. If you're Eric Adams, just balance the budget. If you don't like the immigrants coming in and swarming your, then go to your president. And you know what? You don't have to be a flack for the Turkish government either. Now you're under possible indictment because you were doing favors for the Turkish government getting paid. Just don't do that. It has nothing to do with your race. You have a mayor in Michigan who says that she was getting $250,000, and she said it's all, when they looked at her lavish, it was because of racism. It doesn't, you know, it's like you're looking at a train that is amok, and there's no way of stopping it, and you know where it's going off the cliff, and you want to say to left-wing black officials, don't do this, because you don't know how you sound when every time you do something wrong and then you blame other people for it by calling them racist, you have destroyed the term racism. It means nothing. And don't do this. And contrast this with other people. I know this sounds partisan, but I don't remember Byron Donalds, congressman from Florida, very articulate. I don't remember him doing it. I had lunch for 15 years every 2 weeks with Tom Sowell. Not once did he say, oh, they're after me because I'm black. He said they were after him because he was a conservative. like a lot of conservative, maybe conservative and black by other blacks, but he never ever said that. I've known Shelby Steele for the same amount of time. He's had some health problems. He's a brilliant guy, but anytime he felt criticism, he never said, it's they're racist. He said they're white guilt. They suffer from white guilt, and therefore they use that, they're paranoid about being called a racist, so they try to dump on black conservatives, yes, but he didn't blame anybody. And, you know, I think that's really important to see that this is not a black phenomenon. It is a black left-wing elite white guilt-driven phenomenon.
Yeah.
And what's hopefully, if any good from this can come out of it, is you will have a gradual shift of the black community to 50-50 politics, and the people on the center-right side of the spectrum will be confident, like I think more conservatives are more confident, and they won't have to mention their race. It'll be incidental, not essential. But it's getting very old for these people to use race as a political weapon.
Yeah, sure, especially when they're committing crimes.
This is 2024. We are 50, 60, 70 years into the civil rights. We're into third, fourth generation from the late 50s and 1960s. We have grandmothers now who were beneficiaries of affirmative action. I understand that people are people and birds of a feather flock together, as Plato said, and all of this stuff. But it's not Jim Crow, and this idea that it's always Jim Crow and that you owe, it's not sustainable. And all you're doing, if you're Fannie Willis or you're Eric Adams or you're Claudia, you're just alienating a lot of people, and you're embarrassing your own allies when you do that. It's just, you know, it's. I can remember when I went to Stanford University, I was 20, just ready to turn 21 as a PhD, and I had only had 3 or 4 years of Greek and Latin at UC Santa Cruz, nothing in high school. And my father said, how are you doing in graduate school? I said, be fine, but all these kids have had prep school, a lot of them. Well, what does that matter? That's what he said to me. Who cares? It's what you do now. Just outstudy them. Don't whine to me. That was his attitude. It was the best advice I ever had. He said that about everything. And then I noticed that, you know, there was a guy there, just to get off topic, Lawrence Woodlock. And he was probably the most brilliant classical scholar I ever met. He was a Green Beret from a very poor family. His father had been killed in the Korean War. He grew up with a single parent. He suffered from diabetes. I never heard him whine one bit. Did he go to prep school? No, his prep school was helping the Hmong fight communists and getting wounded in Vietnam. And guess what? When he took his Greek exam, it was perfect. We all said, Larry, you don't know Latin as well. Ha ha, wait till you get to the Latin. Perfect. Everything was perfect. Brilliant. Never complained about anything. And he went through hell in Vietnam. So that's the attitude. That's the American attitude that can do. And I can mention that to so many people. I had a good friend that just died, John Bailey of Illinois. Wonderful person. Saintly. And in 1 year before he died, he just passed away, but about 3 years earlier, he had the following. Burkitt's lymphoma. He was walking in an intersection in Chicago and broke his thigh. And he had prostate cancer. All in one. And I called him and I said, John, man, I feel so bad. No, don't worry about it. I'm here. And I said, you sound like Nietzsche. And he knew exactly what I said. Anything that doesn't kill me, Victor, makes me stronger.
I like that.
That's the attitude.
That's the kind of person that makes a nation, a bunch of whiners, right? Is what you seem to be saying to me.
It is. And that's what I remember growing up about Martin Luther King's message. And that's what I took away from almost every black person I had met. And gosh, I went to high school in an almost exclusively Mexican-American community, and there was not very many black kids. But when I think back at Cecil Thompson or Eloise Thompson or the entire Thompson family. I didn't have a lot of money, but I remember when our Ford tractor broke down, my grandfather would always say, I'm going to get on the phone and call Mr. Thompson. He's an authorized Ford mechanic. He would come out here, and my grandfather, who didn't know really much, he was from the horse age, he'd said, oh my God, the 9N or the Jubilee doesn't work. And Mr. Thompson, don't worry, Mr. Davis, I will figure it out. And my grandfather would sometimes, he'd say, you're out here, Victor, go look at Mr. Thompson out there. Just look at that man work. It's amazing. He had like 9 or 10 kids that were all brilliant. And I know that he was subject to discrimination as being almost the only black family in a Hispanic and white community, but my God, he was talented.
Yeah.
And he was proud, and he was like, that was what I always thought, that was what the whole civil rights movement was about. It wasn't about plagiarizing somebody's work and then blaming everybody as being a racist because they have to let you go as president of Harvard, or coming as an immigrant to the United States and going to Phillips Exeter Academy, and then getting a scholarship to go to Princeton, then going a scholarship to go to Stanford, then being hired right out at Stanford, then getting early tenure, then going back to, I don't see how anybody has been racist to Claudine Gay. And for her to invoke that defense was pathetic. It was awful. And I hope we can get back to that earlier appreciation for the black community. As I remember growing up, was the most self-reliant, independent, at least rural, where I grew up with. And they were models.
Well, Victor, we're at the end of our show, and I would like to read one of the comments from Apple Podcasts. It says, hello, VDH. Thank you for another enlightening podcast. Let's pray we get a conservative leader and not an empty suit, or worse yet, a fourth term of Obama with his merry band of axe grinders. Looking forward to your Saturday shows as my brain needs a rest from the daily destruction of our country and the world. I like
that.
That
is a witty letter, almost nonchalantly. He just assumes we all know, and that's a really sharp thing to say, the fourth Obama term.
I know. Nobody says.
No pretense that there is a Biden presidency.
No, not at all. Well, just recently, Biden told us he had a conversation with François Mitterrand.
You know what I like about doing this show is I read these comments, even that some of the, not that, the crazy angry readers, but some of the angry readers. But you get the impression that the people listening are smarter than you are. You know, they know everything. And I really appreciate that, because I get so many letters about mispronouncing a word or something. And they're right. They're right. So it's good to have I like a combative, intelligent, or maybe superior intelligent audience.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to all of our listeners, and thanks to you, Victor. It was a fascinating show. My gosh, you told us a whole book worth of information.
We have to get to Xenophon, too, everybody. We're looking for Xenophon's Hellenica memorabilia.
Yeah.
Coming up on our Saturday show.
Thanks to everybody. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.
If you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters, millions. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why does the IRS target you and not millionaires? Here's the reason: because millionaires have tax lawyers and you don't. You'll pay up plus interest plus penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need it now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor, like a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and which ones to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time
IRS penalty canceling offer. Call 1-800-245-6000. Again, call 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor.